You can't get to heaven in a red canoe if that red canoe don't belong to you. More musings about Aikido and how to lead chaos successfully on this edition of the Leading Chaos Podcast. Episode 66. Chaos happens. Here we choose to lead chaos rather than be led by chaos. We're sharing tips, resources, networks, and interviews that help you validate your ability to lead chaos and remain steady on. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. This is the Leading Chaos Podcast, and I am your host, Rhea Windcaller. Welcome to the show. Hello, and welcome to the Leading Chaos Podcast. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the Response Training Program's CEO and founder. And Response is a crisis intervention curriculum. In this podcast, we're going over crisis intervention skills together. And I'm dedicating this particular episode to my Uncle Frank. He always had this kind of funny saying, which was, "You can't get to heaven in a red canoe if that red canoe don't belong to you." Now, to say that I've been scratching my head and kind of wondering what the heck does that mean all this time is kind of an understatement. I've always liked it. It's kind of a fun little chimey thing to say. But I wasn't really sure how it fit in. And as I was preparing for this podcast with you, it's a little bit of a light bulb went off in my head, and it kind of felt right. Because I'm reading from my book, Leading Chaos, An Essential Guide to Conflict Management, and I'm moving into the chapter called Cause No Harm. And I specifically wanted to talk about use of force. And that's where I think the saying about you can't get to heaven in a red canoe if the red canoe don't belong to you really works. See, use of force is an interesting thing, and it comes into context for crisis interveners as an organization's mission statement in many ways. It should, hopefully, clearly state when a person is authorized to use hands-on interventions. And when I mean hands-on, another descriptor for that is physical intervention. Now, I've been in the field long enough to know that things change over time. And back in the day, I used to get called into many administrative offices with folks kind of almost shaking and saying, "Please look at our use of force policy." Nowadays, they don't really call that the use of force policy. They call it the seclusion and restraint policy, or all different kind of little clinical names. But when you get down to it, it's really, can you put your hands on another person? How can you put your hands on another person? And in what type of situations do you do that? That's kind of it in a nutshell. And you could put a lot of bells and whistles on that. And sometimes that only confuses it. And in the end, it's really pretty clear. You can't get to heaven in a red canoe if that red canoe don't belong to you. Meaning, force is projecting your own power and strength, actual physical being, on another person. And you might not call that policy use of force anymore. But if you're putting your hands on somebody, that is a physical coercive act. At least it can be. And I've struggled with this for many years in my own teachings and in the response curriculum on how to meet different organizations that I've worked with. One of the difficulties I have is this: the terminology that is kind of collectively accepted in this field, and that is the term restraint, to apply restraints. And there's a number of different kinds of restraints. You could have a chemical restraint, and that means that you are actually using some type of medication to provide a control for that person. So it could be in the form of a pill, or it could be in the form of an injection. And if that actually alters that person's way of being, then indeed that is a form of restraint, thus the term chemical restraint. There's also mechanical restraints, and that's where such as a handcuff, and it could be different wrist wraps around the person. These are all very technical terms, and if you're not in the medical or human service field in that way, they might seem very like you got to be kidding me. But yes, that those are used. And then there are physical restraints. Well, for many years, I actually had in my manual, the response manual, the term different restraints that we would teach. And then not too long ago, in the 2000s, actually late 2000s, I would say, I think it was 2010, we changed all the manuals and took out the word restraint and put in the word escort. Because of the mere fact of the matter that to restrain a person means to do some type of control, coercion, and to restrain their movements, which goes totally contrary to what we teach in response, which is to allow that person freedom of movement. And that, folks, is where it gets a little muddled, because in the general thinking, you know, in so many different areas, people really want to categorize exactly and have everybody under the same house, you know, so to speak, you know, all kind of going lockstep in the same direction. Well, I have to say, I've never been that type of person. The response crisis intervention model is not that type of model either. And so I gleefully took out the word restraint because it actually gave me a visceral feeling of like, no, 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 shaking my head. It doesn't make sense to me. So we moved on to escorts, and that's what I want to talk to you about today. Let's begin with the question, would you rather be escorted or restrained? Would you rather be escorted or restrained? Well, I could immediately raise my hand and say, I would prefer to be escorted any day versus being restrained. An escort is a word that's been used in so many different settings. You get escorted down the aisle. You get escorted into the event. You get escorted out into life. It's always a positive experience because you're often going into something that is welcoming and you want to follow along. That's the beauty of that, just that simple, simple word, escort. Restrain implies a certain specific level of immobilization. And in most settings, there's no reason in my life that I would want to be restrained other than with a seatbelt on a plane or in a car to kind of as a safety issue. But to immobilize another person with a restraint has a certain level of coercive action there. To escort changes everything. Now, I'm going to encourage you, if you work in a professional setting, that you could do this with your colleagues. If you work in a team setting with a group of folks and you are a team of interveners, perhaps you are in a PERT team. And what I mean by that, PERT stands for Psychiatric Emergency Response Team. I kind of just like calling them response teams. And part of that is because the history of response and the naming of the model, the protocol, I chose that so many years ago because response to me just implies to stand in presence, to witness. It implies neither verbal nor physical. And I like that because I think sometimes just to be there, to witness a person, is the biggest gift you could do, just like listening. If you're in a response team or a PERT team or some type of first responder, or even if you're with your family, you're co-parenting with friends, you're in maybe a conflict management group that you're studying together, ask everyone in the group to maybe write it down on the paper. Even if they write yes or no, but give them a moment to think about this. Would you rather be escorted or restrained when there's a crisis? and I imagine that most folks would pick escort. I want you to think about it a little bit deeper. When you think of being restrained, immediately, even as I'm talking here on the microphone, my hands are together up near my face. My elbows are in, tucked into the front of my body. I feel as if my entire body is contracting. And that doesn't provide a lot of movement, does it? I also feel as if my blood pressure has kind of increased. My muscles have become tense. If I'm going into an intervention with the mindset of I need to restrain, or there's a likelihood of a restraint involved here, I'm most likely leaning forward into that. My blood pressure, my breathing has all increased. I have muscle tension. All things that aren't so conducive, are they, to communication nor avoiding injury? Because ideally, as an Aikidoist, I train to constantly keep my body loose and flexible, keeping my breathing very fluid too. So restraint, you know, it has its limitations, doesn't it? And yet it is widely used. Interestingly, I just participated in a survey, I guess it was last year, and I think they're just bringing it out now. And it's for schools to kind of go through all these different crisis programs. And they put down response as not providing any physical intervention, even though we do have a component there, but we call it escorts. And because they don't use that terminology, remember I said how so much of this field of work really kind of uses the same exact language. And there's good things for that, because you want to have unified practices to a certain extent. But thinking out of the box, not so much. So I know that I was kind of, if I could have written down my responses, it would have been so much better than to check off boxes, because it just doesn't work if you're not working in that paradigm of restraints. It just doesn't work for this model. When you think of the word escort, when you think about being escorted, it immediately implies to me freedom of movement. My body expands. My shoulders relax. My arms are already down. I have one hand up and one hand down while I'm sitting here speaking with you. I'm breathing normally. My face even has relaxed. I'm also thinking of options. It's as if I'm thinking clearer than I was before by just putting my mind's eye, if you will, into a different direction. So powerful language is in terms of crisis intervention. And in many ways, I feel the world of crisis intervention is stuck in a restraint because it's constantly meeting violence in that same manner over and over again, often with control. And even though we kind of went a couple of years ago away from control, it's kind of gone back to control again. And that's a sad thing, because it does take training to create a culture and an environment that embodies the concept of escort. And it takes skill, too, to know how to successfully escort a situation towards safety. It doesn't just come easily. Although once you get a little whiff of it, it's not too hard to do it. It really isn't. And who doesn't want to do that? I mean, we don't go to work. We don't want to go through life having to like power over people. We don't want to go through life taking other people's red canoes. It's always best if we can have our own canoe and go to heaven on that versus powering over and making it our own. It just doesn't work that way. Right, Uncle Frank? Uncle Frank is up in the sky somewhere now. I know he's in his own red canoe. So thinking about the escort piece is really, really, really important. That freedom of movement is critical, because movement is conflict's best friend. What do I mean by that is, in past episodes, we've talked about terminology. When you say stop fighting to someone, it's really hard for that person to adhere to that directive, because it's like, what? Stop what? My thoughts, my words, my actions? When you tell a person to stop yelling, they think, no way. How can I do that? You know, I'm going to just push against you. When you tell a person to stop anything, humans have the tendency to say, screw you, I'm not going to do that. Instead, in response, we learn the use of language to say, instead of saying stop, we provide an action. So we would say, if two people are fighting, we'd say, turn away, walk this way. Or we would say, look this way, giving them options to kind of like step out of that fighting mode. Of course, if they're physically fighting, you know, there's different levels of that. And I don't want to quite get on to that right now. Remind me to get back to that later if I forget, okay? I'm counting on you. Because I have so much to say about this, and sometimes I go off in tangents, but so it is. That's the beauty of the podcast. In response, we use language that really invites movement. I want to hear you speaking loudly. Please slow down. Or speaking loudly, I want to hear, slow down. Those are providing actions. You're giving that person a direction to move in. And that's what we do in language. And that subsequently is also what we could do physically, is provide movement. And escorts are all about movement and freedom of movement. In the next episode, what I want to talk about are the elements that we break down what an escort should entail and how I've defined that over the years. But for now, I'd like you to just mull on this thought of what is in your culture, be it at work or at home. Are you in the mode of restraint and using that terminology? If so, look how it impacts your culture. And are there tiny steps that you could take to change that and turn it upside down? And start integrating the use of escorts. I know it isn't easy. Certainly, it hasn't been easy for me. And as much as I feel like I've taken two steps forward, it always feels like it's five steps back. However, we know that movement in any direction sometimes is better than no movement at all, right? Yeah. Again, I'm going to ask that you just ask your team members, if you can, what would you prefer to be, escorted or restrained? And if it is in favor of escort, then begin to look at how you start walking into any intervention. And if you could start renaming even some of the techniques that you're using, just as we did in response. I mean, now we call day two no longer physical intervention. It's called verbal escorts. Those little subtle changes can change a culture around. And truthfully, I find people really welcome it, because as a first responder, as a professional crisis intervener, the last thing I want to do is go home with bumps and bruises or mental or physical fatigue at any level. We do this work because we really want to help people. And helping people get out of conflict and move towards safety all requires movement and not stop action. So we do that, I think we'll be okay, right? And getting back to that red canoe, so it came back in like a 360 degree turn for me, in that I realized that if I no longer have to restrain a person, then I'm not taking their red canoe, because that person's body does not belong to me. Our bodies are our right to have and our own free will to decide where we're going, as long as we're not hurting others. And therefore, even if we are hurting others, can I allow movement so that person stays in their own red canoe and goes on their own path towards heaven? And heaven, in this sense, I am classifying as safety for all. And that is a beautiful thing. Well, if you have any thoughts on this, I would so enjoy hearing from you. My email is Ria, and that is R-I-A at leadingchaospodcast.com. So you could send that to me that way, or you could send it out on Twitter at Leading Chaos and say, hey, I've been listening to the podcast, really enjoying it. And while you're online, if you so happen to have a little bit of time to leave a review and rating on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud, that would be awesome too. Those are all the different feeds out in the world where this podcast gets broadcast, besides the website leadingchaospodcast.com. And there you could find links to response training programs. Hey, there's going to be also some show notes to this. I'll have some of the little points on this to get it out there. But as you can see, I've been kind of busy, so my show notes might be small and tidy. But that's okay. We know how to stay connected. And I am so happy to connect with you today. This is Rhea Windcaller, signing off for now. Be kind, be safe, and keep that movement in your step. Step light, my friends. Ciao for now.